Welcome to San Diego Magazine's Happy Half Hour. This is our fun food and drink focused podcast this week. We're sponsored by Brooklyn Brewery. Californians and transplanted New Yorkers asked, and Brooklyn Brewery listened. Now you can track down their famous Brooklyn Lager, heroically hopped Defender IPA, and tart, breezy Bel Air Sour right here in the Golden State. Head to brooklynbrewery.com/find to see who's pouring Brooklyn in your neighborhood. Hey, I'm Erin. That's Troy. We have Lauren Wingate here with us. That's David, who produces the podcast, as always. And we're so excited for the show today because we have Candace Ely from the San Diego Tourism Authority here because of our hot topic slash just topic of this podcast. Mm-hmm. We're very excited to get into it. Michelin, which is like, what do you, they're just the grand poobah
of the food bible.
The food bible.
Yeah, it's a car company. You know, that started.
It's a tire company, technically.
It's a tire company, you know, that started like being like, hey, if you're going to use our tires, go around Europe, you know, here's a list of great restaurants.
And hold the phone. Is that really what it is?
No, that's how it got started. Yeah. So I just jumped right in there before you even introduced me. I've got opinions on Brooklyn.
I think that we're going to set it up. We're going to talk about this in depth. Don't worry, if you're a Hot Plates fan, it's coming. Hold off. But tell us, I want to hear.
Yeah, so that they made tires, and as a way to encourage people to drive and use their tires, mm-hmm. they were like, oh, here are some things you can stop and see along the road, like attractions and restaurants. So it wasn't just restaurants in the beginning.
They're the original tourism guide.
They are. Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, as the guides got more popular and they discovered that, oh, the restaurants were really what people wanted to see and they wanted to get, then they started to kind of hone in on the restaurants specifically. So tires and restaurants.
And like every media outlet in the world, they ignored San Diego for about 17 decades.
Right. Until
and
now?
Now they're here.
Yes.
So welcome, question mark.
We'll get into that more later, but yeah, that's a very big deal. In case you haven't heard our podcast before, that we always start with hot plates. This is sort of newsy stuff happening in the restaurant scene, openings, closings, that kind of thing. We will talk more with Candace Ely, who is the Director of Communications for the San Diego Tourism Authority. Great friend of the magazine. And then we always end our show with two people, $50. We do have something very fun to announce at the end of the show. We think it's fun. We hope you all think it's fun, too.
I don't even know this. This is awesome.
Don't flip over your little run sheet there. You could if you wanted, but don't flip it over. Okay. Lauren Wingate, take it away. Tell us what's new.
All right. Let's see if I can get through these first two without tears. Urban Solace served its last meal in North Park last week. The restaurant had been on 30th for 12 years and was really popular for its cinnamon rolls and brunch with a live bluegrass band. Owner Matt Gordon, who is amazing, announced the closure on Facebook, saying, "We are so grateful to all of you who have supported us for all these years and who helped us by believing in our mission of using the best, most natural, and sustainable ingredients possible. It has been an uphill battle for quite some time now, and it's just time to move on." Gordon has also closed the Solace and Moonlight Lounge in Encinitas.
Yeah, that's a shocker and a blow. I mean,
it totally was.
Yeah, they were the beacon of revival for North Park. I mean, there was nothing in North Park. I mean, not to say nothing. There was businesses that have been around for a long time, but I mean, it wasn't what it is now. There was no beginning of what it was now until Urban Solace opened. And Matt did it right too. He just, you know, he never like pretended to be all organic. He never pretended to be all local. He's like, look, when it makes sense, I try to do it as best as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, and he was totally honest about it all the way. You know. Got rid of high fructose corn syrup in their bar, got rid of everything. I mean, that was a shocker to me. And it brings back up that, you know, topic that we've talked about so many damn times. And I have to put up one all-encompassing article this week on my SD Food News blog to kind of like pull together all of my thoughts on the minimum wage, you know, and minimum wage and tips and everything else. You know, it really, I mean, the minimum wage is going to kill a lot of these restaurants for better or for worse. I mean, everybody deserves a living wage in San Diego. Everybody deserves a minimum wage, but they need to figure out how to let places that have tipped employees somehow count that money that they're earning on the job there as part of employment pay. It has to be at some point.
Okay, so I have a question related to that. So how much do you think it's that versus real estate prices?
I think it's all. I think it's a big pie, but this is basically what's pushing them over there. They were able to at least like put that puzzle together for a long time, and now the payroll taxes on increasing. I mean, you're talking about a $5 or a $4 increase. Doesn't sound like much, but you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars for some of these restaurants.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just wonder how much, too, the real estate is playing into it. You know, when we're talking about, like, housing prices, obviously the square footage price for these neighborhood restaurants
for sure.
That, you know, one of the things that we always hear about, it it's not just restaurants, but it's also like neighborhood stores. Mm-hmm. Know a lot of folks who have owned record stores, and one of the things that they always say does them in is the price of rent just keeps going up and up and up.
Yeah.
Well, and Matt has been on the show a couple of times, and he's always been open about the fact too that while costs and things like that are going up, and it was a huge thing for that business, and he's been open about that. But he's also talked about how some of the regular customers and sort of the buzz that that restaurant had, it did lose that in terms of just mm-hmm. human beings coming in. And that's the part that I think is just sort of a killer about it mm-hmm. is that he really was one of those people with the Linkery and a couple of those Chloe and some mm-hmm. of those businesses that really opened and helped San Diego kind of jumpstart whatever this version of our food scene is now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's almost like the thing he created is the thing that ended up swallowing them
yeah,
up.
Because it's, now you're not the new sexy thing anymore. There's yeah. 10 right. other things on the same block now. So
right. And there's 10 other things in 10 other neighborhoods mm-hmm. now, or they weren't ever. And I think a lot of those people probably were inspired by experiences they had at Urban Solace or the Linkery or places like that. Mm-hmm. And so now we do have this great food scene to speak of that we didn't have 15 years ago, but it's just such a bummer to see someone that was, mm-hmm. Such an integral part of it, mm-hmm. not be able to keep it going. I mean, but what about the passion piece too? He was on the show a couple months ago, and I don't know, I feel like there was something in his eyes that looked like too peaceful. It was sort of like, I don't know if he was plotting this then or thinking about the piece that was coming his way soon. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think once you hit that moment, you're like, mm-hmm. You know what? He is keeping, for everybody needs to know this, and it really hasn't been covered as much. He is keeping his catering operations going, so you can still get Urban Solace catering. So that's excellent. Fantastic.
It's a grind, though, right?
It is a grind. I talked to Matt, and he's like, he's like, I don't really like catering, to be quite honest with you. I like having a spot where people come in, and I feel my community. I see my community every single day. He actually inspired, you're talking about the hot new thing. He inspired that article that I did called,
It's up on the blog right now.
Restaurant promiscuity is out of control.
Yes.
It's we're just chasing the hot new thing. Mm-hmm. It's funny because this was an article that I was really proud of, and he was the one that spearheaded it, really. And I was like, you're really right. Did the big story. Somebody commented right down the bottom. Comment sections are beautiful. I love those trolls. They're like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever read in my life. Thank you. I liked the comment. I'm all nice. Thank you so much. But I mean, really, it is. We are just chasing the new hot thing. Mm-hmm. You see something Instagram, gotta go. Gotta go. And you're not going back. You're not going back to like that local person that has put their time and soul and money to building the neighborhood something nice. You really should return. If we ideal world, yes, go try some new things, but also return to that local mom and pop. And just go visit them once a month, once a whatever. Give them your money.
Okay, moving on.
Yes, there was another iconic restaurant closure in North Park.
Oh yeah,
Peking Cafe Chop Suey, which had been in the neighborhood for almost 90 years. They say that the restaurant was open.
Restaurants in San Diego.
Yeah, the oldest restaurant in San Diego opened in 1931. The Fong family was opened by Leo Fong, said they were ready to retire, and the founder's grandchildren weren't interested in taking over the business. Hmm. Generations of San Diegans posted their memories of the old school Chinese restaurant on its Facebook page.
The crazy thing about this, they have like the husband and wife, the husband cooked, the wife was a server there for 40 years. Their grandchildren were servers, and I read it, I was reading into it, and the grandchildren had the opportunity to take over the restaurant, mm-hmm. And they all have different careers. One was a photographer, one's a graphic designer or something like that. And the parents actually told them, they're like, don't get into the restaurant business. Like, you could, or you could do literally anything else.
You go be a creative.
Exactly. Go be a poet for all
I care. It's more stable.
What's going to happen to that space? I feel like that visually as a part of the neighborhood.
I am just waiting to see. I really hope whoever takes over that space maintains the architectural front, because that building is so fantastic and it's so North Park. You see that and
Yes.
It would be a big change if that.
It would be like ripping down the North Park sign.
I know. I think people in the neighborhood would be really upset if someone came in and tore it down. Yeah. So, fingers crossed for responsible developer.
Well, whoever's leasing the space out, we should get in contact with them and tell them our demands.
Yes, absolutely.
Give them demands, exactly. Yeah. We're not trying to be intractable here, but you can't change anything.
You can't touch it or do anything.
And it should be some sort of similar concept idea. Thank you.
This episode is depressing, but it's ticking up a little bit because Red Fox Room is not closing, but it is moving.
It is moving, but you still have time to visit before it leaves the Lafayette Hotel to its new home on El Cajon Boulevard. The famous steakhouse and bar has been a San Diego institution for 60 years. years, and it was originally going to close at the end of March, but the owner got an extension on the lease through June. The new location, though, will be just across the street, and the Red Fox famous wood-paneled bar will be entirely rebuilt.
Like they're taking each panel and moving it, or they're going to build that's with new wood panels.
Well, they shipped a lot of that stuff over, from England.
This is technically the second time that it's moved, because they shipped it all over from England to bring it here and rebuild it. So now it's just going across the street. It's actually pretty easy.
Yeah.
Comparatively.
Like the carved mantle above the fireplace, it dates back to 1642.
What?
Oh my gosh.
If you don't know, I please urge every single listener who may not know what the Red Fox Room is. There's got to be a few of you. And you know, I would urge you, before it leaves, I would urge you to go to the new place too, because you just want to support old institutional classics like that. But before it leaves that original spot, go in, watch that piano bar. There's going to be like an 80-year-old playing the trombone or, you know, something there.
Oh, yeah. It's maybe great, great experience every time.
David and I were talking about, for our little podcast family, having a family dinner like once a month just with us, and maybe that should be our first one.
Oh,
we should all go there.
Love
just our
that.
Little family. We're all going to go out to dinner.
Candace, you're invited.
Excellent.
Yes, you can come too. Okay, and then here's some good news, El Hardin. Tell us what this is.
Yes.
Just, could she just be in the news anymore?
I know. Can we talk about El Hardin and Claudette anymore? But this is amazing. Claudette was recently reviewed, El Hardin, by the New York Times. Chef Claudette Zepeda Wilkins and San Diego restaurant scene to see them get some national attention. The New York Times critics said that the burrito taco is formidable. Also, that was our VIT this month. We also thought it was
well-timed.
And that the result, no matter what you order, is a meal that weaves an epic culinary narrative in finely rendered and often delicious details. How exciting.
Go Claudette.
That was such a great review. Oh. I was so happy to see that.
Yes. Yeah, I was too. You know, and again, Claudette's worked her butt off, man.
She really has.
She's a really just likable person. If you don't know who Claudette is, you can watch her on Top Chef. The interesting thing about Top Chef, when she was on there, they cast her as like
the villain.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every reality show has to have their villain that they create, basically. And so she got the unfortunate moniker of being
love her. I love her so much. She's just one of those
She's
people.
So sweet, though.
She's like
so nice.
She's a New Yorker in that way. You know what I mean? She just like tells you straight up. My favorite story about Claudette is I was in there for our review for San Diego Magazine, and there were a couple technical issues, you know,
something about carrots.
So I told her, I'm like, she's like, how's the meal? And I looked at her, I go, hey, do you intentionally cook your carrots really, really al dente? Like, you know, like I'm going to the dentist al dente, you know? And she's like, no, let me see him. She goes, oh my God. So like 5 minutes later, she comes back and she goes, you know what my cook's doing right now? He's cooking carrots. He's back there. He's like, I want to see you put that in the pot. I want you to finish those carrots because they're not cooked. You know, she's a badass.
No, well, that's what I'm so happy to see her getting national attention and some acclaim, because she does work so hard and she cares so much that, you know, it just comes through in her cooking. So it's well-deserved accolades as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Do you think she's going to get a solid New York, El Hardin is going to get that solid New York Times bump? Because when Wayfair got featured in the New York Times.
Oh, God, yeah.
If you don't go before sunrise, don't bother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a lot of travelers too, you know, and New York Times is read by a lot of travelers, and we obviously have a big travel to city, you know, for a lot of tourism, you know, so I think those people will go check it out. Thank God, because, I mean, she's got a beautiful space down there at El Hardin, but it's also tough. Like, I mean, that corner of Liberty Station is tough to activate. Yes. I was in there one night and it was dead, and I'm like, you are an amazing chef with a great concept.
Yeah, but it's cut off by those weird curvy roads. It's not like in the walkable part. It's over by the golf course. If you're listening and you haven't been, it's over by the golf course. Enter in on Lytton Street instead of entering in off Rosecrans, and there's separate parking and stuff over in that area if you want to go just there. But I mean, she's got the James Beard nod. She's got the New York Times story. You're doing the Insider's dinner with her this week. You have covered it extensively. The UT's covered it extensively. So she's really enjoying quite the accolades.
Absolutely.
Quite the attention.
She's on a magic carpet right now.
We congratulate you, Chef.
So happy.
Good job.
Yes.
Okay, how about the Patio Group? You guys are down to two more here on Hot Plates.
Right. Where are we going? The Patio Group. The company owns the Patio on Goldfinch and Fireside. It's opening a new spot in East Village. It used to be the Harvest. Now it'll be Himmelberg's. It's going to be a two-story bar with a rock and roll theme and live music. It's on 10th and J.
Yeah, Himmelbergs, I really love what they did. Gina Champion Kane, who was one of the ones that was instrumental in bringing House of Blues to San Diego, owns the Patio Group, and one of her friends to pass away from cancer. And so that's his last name, Himmelberg. They already have this concept up in Encinitas, but she's doing an ode to him and his lifestyle and everything else. A lot of healthy stuff, a lot of healthy bowls and everything else, you know, to just promote vitality, obviously, because it's got a, you know, a really, you know, bad health story attached to it. But I mean, it's a really nice homage.
Look for it as you're walking to the Padre games this summer. It's right on 10th as you're headed to the ballpark. And it's like a two-story restaurant. So I feel like every restaurant that's been in there has always struggled because you don't like see people eating as you're walking by. They're upstairs on the second floor.
Exactly.
Okay. And then lastly, I know Wing It is very personally excited about this one. You're getting another coffee shop. How many coffee shops are in
beloved neighborhood
the seven
of
blocks
Park
of South Park?
Is getting its fourth coffee shop in about 4 months. Dark Horse is expanding to South Park, taking over the old Daily Scoop space, which is across the street from Del Sur Cantina. They'll be serving ice cream with their partner Mutual Friend, vegan donuts, spicy skinny donuts, and it's right there on Juniper and 30th. And it's going to be really awesome. So look for that this summer.
I'm glad that my husband and I no longer live in South Park, because he's a complete coffee addict and we would have gone broke if we were still living in South Park. He'd be...
so dangerous. You can get your coffee in the morning, your cocktails in the afternoon, your beer.
It's so good too. I mean, it is a fantastic coffee shop. I'd heard the buzz about it, and I went in and I was like, whatever, it's coffee. Yeah, yeah, Ethiopian single bean, whatever, you know. And I'm like, oh Jesus.
Yeah. It's so distinctive. Like you drink it and you know, oh, this is Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. It has such a distinct flavor.
Yep.
Oh, I am very, very excited. And that's it for Hot Plates.
That's it, you guys. Go to sandiegomagazine.com. We'll put up a post with all of this stuff that we just talked about and link to this episode. So you can find out about all the stuff and make your reservations and read more about it. We will link to that podcast episode where we had Claudette Zepeda-Wilkins as a guest as well, if you want to hear us, our chat with her. That was last year sometime. And also, this is when I ask you to go to sdmag.com/insiders to learn about all the cool new deals that you can have and find and be a part of as an insider. You're doing a private dinner with her coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing, right? I mean, you, as a subscriber to the magazine, you get the magazine, but you do the insiders and you get a few things that aren't included that nobody else can get. And dinners, I mean, it's just happening this week. It's going to be really cool. We're going to basically share our embarrassing stories from our careers.
Troy, I'm sure you have some good ones.
Oh my God.
Well, you both have that food TV thing, and that's just, there's so many stories. I always wish we could talk about more of those things on this podcast, because there's so many stories about that life and that world. It's such a weird, interesting, specific world.
It is.
Food, TV thing.
Yeah, I'm going to tell a story without trying to turn off everybody's appetite, but there is I had to do an entire episode with Pee Pants on Food Network once. I will tell that story on Thursday.
Well, now if that doesn't persuade you to sign up.
Things happen on TV sets, you know?
Yes. Okay, well, the voice that you've been hearing our entire episode is Candace Ely. She is the Director of Communications for the San Diego Tourism Authority. Full disclosure, great partner and friend of our magazine. And you oversee the global PR strategy across 8 different countries. You helped produce media coverage of San Diego in outlets like the New York Times, The Guardian, Food and Wine, CNN, Time Magazine, and more. Your passion is promoting arts and culture, diversity, dining, and bi-national tourism. You're a big proponent and a big advocate, I think, of, you know, the media, trying to help educate the media about our close relationship with Tijuana and Mexico in general.
Yeah.
That's a big thing for you. But you've been on our podcast before. You've been co-hosted with us before.
Yeah, so I filled in for Troy one day. I'm a little insulted. I, you know, didn't immediately get a job offer.
That I'm still here? Thanks, Candace. Kind of insulted I didn't replace Troy.
But we saw you up in, where was it, Sacramento, San Francisco?
Yes, I was recently up in Sacramento with the Visit California, which is the state's tourism arm.
Which is basically like a tourism arm of a country. They're a huge, I mean, tourism for California,
I mean, California is
a
basically,
huge.
Basically, you know, bigger than most countries.
Gazillions of dollars spent on tourism.
Yes, so much money. So they announced the partnership with the Michelin Guide to produce a California guide. So it's the first time that they'll have actually done an entire state and not just a city. And so that really kind of came about because within Michelin and what they've reviewed, they've really only focused on San Francisco and hadn't gone to any other parts of California. So then, you know, the other cities within California are like, hey, what about us? What about us? And, you know, as Michelin was kind of seeing all of this discussion, they're like, well, maybe it makes more sense to just do the whole state and get some of these key cities in one fell swoop.
Wait, and we're a key city?
And we are a key city.
Oh my
we're
God.
A city.
We're never a key city.
I know. Yeah. So very, very excited that San Diego was on that list of cities that they were going to come and review.
So do you know any of the details? Like, what does that mean? So there's going to be this guide that comes out in print, hopefully online too. And yes. It'll just say these are the restaurants that Michelin people like, or how does it work?
Yeah. So there are multiple restaurants that will be in every city. So they will... they'll review restaurants and it'll be, you know, not unlike a Zagat guide,
okay.
You know, where it'll just give you like, okay, here's price range, here's what we liked, here, you know, here's our favorite dishes, that sort of thing. But then the best of the best of the best will then get the Star Award, which is the coveted, you know, Oscars of the food industry. So, of course, no city that is participating in the Michelin Guide for California is guaranteed to receive any stars. It's an editorial process that is determined entirely by their judges as they go around and dine around in secret. They're all...
Who are the judges?
I don't know. It's very, very secretive.
I mean, what kind? I mean, what do they do?
It's pretty mixed. So I've heard that there's, you know, different people within the food industry. Like I heard one might be like someone who's a coffee roaster.
Okay.
So it's very mixed. It's producers. It's people who work in kitchens.
Like, do we think Tom Chino is one or someone like that?
It could be. Mm-hmm. It could very much be someone like that. Yeah. So extremely secretive. Okay. They've already been doing their research, so they've been dining around in San Diego
for the last year, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And the guide
itself.
You
see somebody with nice tires watching.
I really didn't know that it was the tire. I didn't know that.
No, it's the same thing. Yeah. So at the launch event, they had the, you know, the Michelin man. The guy, the big puffy, stay puff marshmallow guy.
So the corporate Michelin, which is owned by who knows who, some big old company, they still are, oh no, we do the food thing too.
Yeah.
They're still connected.
Food and tires.
Well, I mean, it really is. It's been one of the, you know, the highest, most esteemed award, you know, in food, along with James Beard Award and, you know,
Michelin is international, right?
Yes.
So talk about that a little bit, Troy, like the one star, two star, three star thing, because one star is like amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it basically goes up. And one star is basically saying it's a very good restaurant in its genre, in its field, in its city, everything else. And I think it's like two stars is like it's worth a detour, like, oh, you know, whatever they say. And then three stars is like that's as good as it possibly is. Like,
yeah, it's world, best of the best in the world. And there's very few of restaurants that have three Michelin stars.
No, exactly. Yeah. You know, and look, at the end of the day, I mean, this is a great thing. You know, I mean, who knows like what awards are worth?
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's all arbitrary. You know, there are certain restaurants. I mean, like I've said, we haven't won a James Beard Award yet, and there are so many chefs in San Diego that deserve James Beard Awards. You know, and so I'm a little bit miffed about the whole award thing, but it's really good for the city. It is great. I mean, it's internationally paid attention to. I mean, everybody I know that travels has looked at the Michelin rating. Yeah, it gets people to pay attention.
Yes. I mean, you're in tourism. Isn't there groups of people, a certain set of traveler that they plan trips around Michelin
guided,
Michelin-starred restaurants and wanting to people have a bucket list of visiting every single one?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, one that a lot of people know is like the French Laundry. You know, that's one of those like, before I die, I want to eat at the French Laundry. So, you know, the star status certainly... it lends that air of like, this is something I have to do in my life. But even just having Michelin pay attention to the city of San Diego in a way that they never have. I've been getting so much feedback from people in the last year saying like, wow, you know, San Diego's dining scene is really starting to be a big deal.
Do you think?
And I'm like, starting? It's been that way for, you know,
well,
a decade.
I know you worked a lot on that piece that Travel and Leisure did.
I did, yeah. I worked
and
really closely with the magazine.
The most beautiful piece about our city. And I feel like ever since then, I've started to see like Elle coming in to do a UK, you know, for a feature for their UK edition.
Exactly.
And, like, has that
really helped
catapult us or kind of shown us in a different light? Are they coming to call now?
Well, you know, the week that the Travel and Leisure piece came out, I did get a lot of phone calls from other publications that were like, oh, you know, I'm starting to hear about San Diego.
I heard San Diego's a city.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I heard it's a place that might exist and it might even be near a border. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should be paying attention. So it's really great. I mean, as someone who's been doing this for 8 years, it's really great to see so many of the things that, you know, my office been championing, and we're starting to really see that pay off, and it's been really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, just being on the national stage, and again, you're talking about the national stage there. I mean that's an international stage. Yeah.
So what kind of restaurants typically get Michelin stars? They're pretty fancy, like kind of experimental. It's different than James Beard, I feel like, that recognizes sort of local and regional specialty. I feel like Michelin, I don't know, you correct me if I'm wrong, Troy.
They do a lot of different things too.
They do.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do all kinds of economic gamut. You know, I mean, if you're, you know, they do like small little noodle shops in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So what do we think that San Diego, where do we think they're going to go? What do you think they're going to like here?
I mean, I think everyone knows that sort of the front runner, you know, if we're going to see a star. Oh, yes, exactly, is Addison.
Addison Delmar, if you haven't been. William Bradley, who's been Thomas Keller's like kind of, not protege.
Protege, I mean, yeah. they're still very close.
They're really close,
yeah,
exactly.
Apparently Thomas Keller comes to town and mm-hmm. dines at Addison regularly, so, yeah.
You know, but there are a few chefs. You know, it was interesting when the James Beard Awards came and the Michelin star started to, you know, Michelin Guide was talking about San Diego. I mean, there's a few chefs that have been working here and done such excellent work for so many years that it's almost a crime they haven't won. I mean, Carl Schroeder at mm-hmm. Market
right.
being
Doesn't
another one.
Doesn't he spear the fish he before
is,
he gets it and stuff?
Yeah, and he runs his kitchen like a maniac. You know, like he yells at people, he gets things done. I mean, he runs a really tight ship in a very classically French way, you know. And then you have like Jason Nibb over at 910.
Oh yeah, another
you know,
one who just does not get the recognition that he deserves.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Trey Fauché over at George's, you know, California Modern. You know, I mean, those are chefs that, I mean, yes, some of the younger chefs definitely deserve. I mean, like Anthony Wells over at Juniper and Ivy is phenomenal. You know, I mean, there's a lot of chefs that definitely deserve.
And who's the seafood guy we had on?
Rob Ruiz.
I know that's just in terms of sustainability, he's one of the foremost on the planet.
That's a very interesting sort of turn for a chef to kind of have that kind of advocacy.
So one of the things that's exciting about Michelin, so they do have very specific standards that they're mm-hmm. judging every restaurant against. And so, you know, that's going to include things like service and creativity and all of that. But a big part of that for them is fresh ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to kill it with that.
Their president, when he was talking about the criteria, was like the freshness of the ingredients and mm-hmm. how that comes through in the food is very important in their criteria. So
San Diego's a farm with the city in it.
We're going to win that.
And an ocean next to it.
And an ocean. Yeah, exactly. We have a water farm and we've got a land farm. You know, I mean, it really is. You know, and that's, hey, question for you in terms of when you're going out there representing San Diego, what are some of the misconceptions, the biggest misconceptions that people have for a city?
I think the biggest misconception is that it hasn't changed in 20 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, something that I hear all the time when I travel around the country and the world even, and I meet with editors at whether it's, you know, television production crews or magazine editors, I'm like, have you been to San Diego? That's my first question to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer that I get a lot of the time is like, yeah, I came 20 years ago, like on a family vacation, and, you know, we went to the zoo and it was fine. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's the biggest thing that we're kind of fighting against, is that San Diego hasn't changed from the San Diego of, you know, the 90s.
Yeah. And the zoo is a world-class zoo.
Oh, the zoo's
right?
amazing, and I'm never going to say that it's not.
No, it's just like being known for Wally World when you have so many other things
exactly,
going on.
Exactly.
You know?
That's the one that I'm constantly fighting against. And then, and still, you know, people who think that it's a sleepy town, that mm-hmm. comes up a lot. When I go out and I say, like, look, San Diego's the second largest city in California, it's the eighth largest city in the country, people are genuinely astounded by that.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't really understand the depth of the experience that you can have here. So that's what my office is constantly trying to do, is to educate people on how diverse, how many different experiences you can have in San Diego, whether it's mm-hmm. dining or attractions or shopping or nightlife or hiking, or, you know, you can do so many things here. It's so, so diverse. And that's the part that I think a lot of people still, you know, in the back of their minds are thinking.
They basically think, I mean, you think about 10, 15, 20 years ago. I mean, San Diego was two places after dark. It was Gaslamp and PB.
And PB, mm-hmm. yeah.
That
yeah.
was mm-hmm. it. That was it. And now every neighborhood has activated its own nightlife. I will agree, though, that it's sleepy in a good way.
Exactly. That's something that we tell people a lot of the time is like, you know, it's maintained the laid back, mm-hmm. you know, the beach town vibe that that a lot of travelers want, because mm-hmm. that's like when you're traveling, you know, if you're on your vacation, you don't want to be like, oh God, I'm stuck in traffic in Los Angeles and I can't find anything. And, you know, and it's, I have to, you know, make a reservation a month in advance and I can't, you know, like you don't mm-hmm. want that stress. So that's where like San Diego kind of hits that sweet spot. You know, we have all of this great stuff, but it's chill.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is a 45-mile-an-hour zone. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we're totally fine in that. It doesn't mean that we're dead or we don't have any cultural acumen and that we don't have great chefs and artists.
Absolutely.
And,
you know, right. Yeah.
I think that San Diego, too, just is falling into that cultural sweet spot now where meditation and mindfulness is so in. Everybody wants farm
sustainability.
To table.
Yeah.
Everyone wants what we've had all along.
And we've always had that. Right. So I think we have to fight against proving that to people.
Right. And that's not just a fad cities. Here. Like, we've always been like this.
Right. Yeah.
They went whale watching this weekend on a buddy of mine's sailboat, and we found ourselves in Mexican waters. Mm. You know, I got a message on my phone saying, "You've entered Mexico. Welcome." You know, and I'm like, oh,
like no. "It's oops, weird." You
turn
look
around.
Up, you're like, "Are you looking at?"
I know. I mean, that's fantastic. You know, yeah. I mean, we have.
Well, oh. I was in LA this weekend, and I was like, "Oh, I'm in LA. There's yeah. so much traffic. How do I get back to where I want to go?" So
that's a good question. Though we're almost finishing up, you guys. We'll end with two people, $50, like we always do. But do you think the Michelin folks are going to venture into Tijuana? How is that going to play in? Do we get credit for being in that region, or is that going to be different? Is that?
I don't believe for this particular guide they will be going to Tijuana. Okay. It's very focused specifically mm-hmm. on California.
Yeah. Maybe yeah. they will realize though when they're here.
Yes.
How closely aligned yes. they, especially food wise yeah. and wine wise and all that stuff.
And I mean, we talk about that so much. It's such a big part of what we promote in terms of why San Diego is a special destination.
Yeah.
Is that connection and the food, the art, the culture? It makes it different than any other part of the world. And I, you know, I work with media who come in from literally all over the world, and they have said to me I've never been to an area where there were two countries that were so closely linked mm-hmm. that they could just feel that.
And two massive cities.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I love hearing that. I think that's, yeah, it's what makes it special.
I love Mexico, and I want Mexico, and I want Tijuana to have its own, you know, I mean, its own Michelin guide.
Right,
you know,
exactly. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like, though, is like when people do stories like about San Diego, and they're like, so we came to San Diego, and then we went to Mexico. They don't talk about San Diego.
Yeah, yeah, we don't like that either. You know? We're like, you talk about Tijuana,
you're
yes,
preaching
but
to
also,
the choir.
Also talk about San Diego, please.
I think it's just all mobbing towards being one region. That'll eventually everyone will see that it's so closely aligned. Okay, well, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I could
this was
talk
awesome.
About San Diego
no,
all day.
Well, I just knew that you were actually there, and I knew that there was deep connections to Visit California, so you were a perfect guest to come in and tell us all about this. So we appreciate you so much. Again, you guys, we're going to link to all of this stuff at sandiegomagazine.com. We are just about out of time, but we always end with two people, $50, our own personal recommendations of what we've been eating and drinking lately. And the super cool thing is coming up at the end of this.
Okay.
So keep listening. Okay, Candace, two people, $50.
Okay, so... this could very easily go over 50 for two people if you wanted it to.
I said Addison one time.
Never live that down.
It was really dumb.
Well, you can walk in and smell Addison. That'll cost you $50.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think the parking is $50.
However, I recently went during a happy hour, and it was me and two other people, and for the three of us, it was $75, so it was right on the money.
There you go.
Tanuki in Kensington. So it's a Japanese spot. It's just of like a block over from the intersection of Adams Avenue and
the main drag, the sign,
and Marlboro. Yeah, uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So it's like one block east of that. I believe the chef who is there actually was at Nobu for a while. Hmm. But so they have fantastic sushi, sashimi, but then also just like some Japanese small plates and a fantastic happy hour offering where it's like it basically like the price of a beer, you get an appetizer with it.
Right.
So okay. You can do really well.
That's like Italian style where they give away food at happy hour.
Exactly, yeah. And so we had this fantastic black cod, miso cod, and it was enormous. So, you know, I mean, it's like a $15 entree, but it's really big. So, yeah, you can dine very well there. And it's, I almost was like a little hesitant to share it because it's right by my house. And I'm like, oh,
you just
I
messed
like
this
that.
All up.
I know, now everyone's going to go there.
It's good that, yeah, Kensington doesn't have sushi, do they?
Until now. Is it new? Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty new. I want to say like within the last 6 months that it opened.
Pretty
yeah.
Cool. Oh. Okay, how about you, Troy? $2 50
$2 50 I am still, it is a long process because I'm covering the entire city, but we're still on the vegetarian burger train. And I was really hesitant. I didn't think I was going to like this one, to be quite honest with you. But Plant Power's Big Zach, it's a Big Mac. It's a Big Mac rip. It is everything you remember about a Big Mac back when you were a kid. And I don't know if you have a soft spot for that. If not, that you're dead inside. But I mean, it is Big Macs were delicious and beautiful, and they're just made of absolute crap. You know, so this is basically made of plant-based stuff. The burger has a nice like texture to it. It's got that like Thousand Island sauce, but it's all plant-based. There's no eggs, no dairy, no anything else. It's a really good, I think it's probably 1,000 calories, but it's really, really good. If you miss a Big Mac and you've moved on to vegetarian, or you just like to eat plant-based occasionally, but you still like that fast food flavor, that's a damn good thing.
And remind everyone where Plant Power is.
Plant Power is right on, they have a couple different locations throughout San Diego now, but the first one was right on the corner of Sunset Cliffs when you're entering Ocean Beach. Now they've got one in Encinitas, I believe, somewhere else, I can't remember.
Cool. My $2 50 and I can't remember the name of it, you have to help me. What's the new place in Convoy with the sort of secret thing in the back?
Realm of 52.
I went there on a Thursday night with Jenner, and it was neat.
Yeah,
I just went last night, actually.
It's kind of cool, right? Yeah. It's sort of, you go into, what's the place
Common
in the front?
Theory.
Common Theory in the front, and then you just ask the gal that's right there, can I go into that special place? And they take you back, and you smell these herbs, and they walk you through this thing, and then you go into the super neat. I mean, it's just very cool. You have to go
Speakeasy.
Experience.
Yeah,
sort of. Is it really small?
No, it's actually really big inside. Yeah,
but it's very vignette-y. Like you sit kind of in your own vignette. Like it's not like it's an open bar where you're wandering around. They only take people for as many seats as they have, which I liked because you're not just wandering through a place. You're sitting in a seat, and the cocktails were super cool. I had one where he did a smoke thing and pumped it in, and it came with a salted pretzel, and it was very different. If you're someone that likes to go out to every new place, or you want to see what's new, and you feel like you've been everywhere, this place felt different. Yeah. And the food was good.
Food
it was like
really
spicy
yeah.
potatoes, a crab corn fritter thing.
Yeah, we had those too. It's getting a ton of attention because of the cocktails, obviously. And so, you know, people are... But I was really impressed by the food. I thought it was quite good.
Yes, spicy, but good.
Yes.
Okay, how about you, Wing It?
All right, mine is definitely like two people, $10. Pot Pie Co. in University Heights. I went for the first time for National Pie Day, and we had a lot of fun in their kitchen playing for an Instagram feature. But I took a bunch of their pies home, and I had a steak and ale pie, which was just steak and carbs, and that really filled a niche that I wanted. And then also their green hog and cheese pie. Kind of had some green anjo chilies, some jack cheese. Both were gluttonous, but small enough to feel like I didn't gorge. And you can literally get like 10 of them.
And they are opening up a new spot 50 feet from my house.
Yes.
Oh, boy, you're in trouble.
In Ocean Beach. Oof. Yeah, I know.
It's so easy. Like, I'm hungry. It's lunch. I'll just get a little pot pie. 12,000 calories
Except
later.
For, you know, my daughter hates pot pies. I'm like, she's 7 years old. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's carbs glistening and like caramelized up top. And it's got all this bread
How are you
stuff.
Raising your children? My God.
Oh, it's the, I am the food critic. It's like they say, like the shoemaker's children wear no shoes.
Exactly.
She will not eat anything.
Of course.
Oh. Anything. Like I will make like some really, really good, like I'll make a risotto, you know, I'll braise a chicken.
What child wants to eat risotto?
I know. Yeah. But I will make good food. I'll put a parm in that. She'll eat anything. But I mean, she won't even eat it. I'm like, come on, man.
No. As a child, I had 5 foods that I ate, and that was about it until I turned like 27. And then I was like, oh, all food's good.
So my shame.
So you gotta wait.
Yeah, my shame as a food critic is that like, honestly, I'll be like, I'll make something and I'm like, you're really gonna love this, and she'll be like, this is bullshit. And I feel
a humor essay in there.
And I'm like, well, you're getting Annie's mac and cheese. That's it. Like I feed my daughter as a food critic Annie's mac and cheese more than I really should admit and publicly. But, you know?
It's okay. Admit it. It makes all of us feel all the more normal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, you guys, here's the really fun thing. We want to hear what you guys like for $2 50. We finally have a phone number where you can call in.
Oh,
and
this
leave
is
us
the
a
reveal.
Message. Okay,
is
so
it
we
David's
have,
personal cell?
it's like speak clearly so he can record it with a little cord thing and put it into his computer. No, it's a real thing. I don't know what it is, but it works, and we'll play back answers on the podcast. Assuming you're a real person, so that's the one thing we need to do is be able to know that you're like a real human. So here's the number, 619-744-0535. Leave us a message and give us like your name and your neighborhood or some way that we can verify that you're real. Because we're not just going to read off random things that people leave us right. as a message. Yeah, so name and neighborhood would be great. David wants your social.
Yeah, routing number, please.
Bank PIN. Yes.
But really, we'd love...
And Instagram password.
Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear your two people, $50. That's been a long-running thing on this show, and I think we'd all love to hear from listeners where you guys go. Also this week, we would love to hear any Urban Solace memories that you have. I think it'd be kind of cool to hear from you all. Because we've gotten a lot of feedback from you guys. So that's it.
You should have given him David's number. One of my favorite stories of all time was I was watching a Jason Mraz concert and he flashed up this big phone number on the screen in front of like 25,000 people. And I asked him, I'm like, was that really your drummer's number? And he goes, yep. Gave his
drummer's number. I thought you meant his number.
Gave his drummer's number to 30,000 people. They wrote it down. That drummer had to actually close down his account and his phone line.
That is mean.
I know. That's so mean.
Anyway, so that's David's number. Give it a call.
Thanks, you guys. We'll be back next week.
See you guys.